Dagwit.
Hi, I'm Ben.
And I'm Stefan.
Get on with it, let's go.
We're animating in threes. We are an animation podcast where we talk about an animated film or series from an animator's perspective. And this week we are going to be talking about Star Wars The Clone Wars, and specifically the Umbara arc, which is in Season 4.
Episodes, Disc 2.
Episodes 7 to 10.
All I remember is the color purple.
I'm going to edit some of this out. Okay. Okay, but before we get into that, we are going to be talking about tunes we've tuned into. So, Michael.
I watched for a few dollars more. Does that count? Is there anything I watched this week?
No, that's not animated.
It's the second in the Dollars trilogy by Sergio Leone.
With Clint Eastwood?
Clint Eastwood.
What a specific thing to watch even...
You know, you're just in that mood that you want to watch a Western? You're in those moods?
No!
I'm in those moods.
Is that even a mood?
Yeah, I'm in that mood a lot. I like Westerns.
Westerns? Such a specific one, though! It's not even the first one, it's the second one!
My favorite one is still The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, as is, you know, it's everybody's favorite, because it has my favorite scene in cinema history.
That's actually the only one of the trilogy I haven't watched.
Oh, really? It's the best one! Well, in my opinion, it's the best one. It's got what I think...
It's the most iconic one.
Yeah. I know. But I haven't watched it. I just didn't get around to it.
It contains my favourite scene in cinema history because there's only two scenes.
Is it that?
No, that's literally the first thing that happens in the film.
Okay.
But I've only literally, like, sweat during the climax of two films. And it's been Back to the Future, when he's driving the DeLorean towards the clock tower.
And We're Back, a Dinosaur Story.
We're Back, a Dinosaur Story.
And the
climax of The Good, the Bad, the Ugly.
Yeah.
And I think it's fantastic. And okay, you should watch it. It has nothing to do with animation.
Stefan, what have you been watching these past 2 weeks?
Well, guess what, Michael? I've been watching more Miraculous.
Is that starring Clint Eastwood?
No, it's a French one.
Oh.
So not... I'm getting through season 3 and it's so great. I'm really loving it. Like, I'm kind of addicted to every day just opening another episode and going, oh, this is so awesome. It's episodic, but it has a more serious arc under it now. And it feels so well crafted.
Mm.
Other than that, I started watching the anime, an old one called Samurai Champloo. Oh yeah. Samurai Champloo.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, it's,
audience, do you know what that is? I don't.
No, it's an old anime. It's by the...
Call in.
It's by one of the same studios who did Cowboy Bebop.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
And the same...
You did mention it in a previous podcast, I believe.
I may have. But it has the same voice actor as Spike Spiegel, so I'm all sold for it. And it is so interesting because it's set in Edo period Japan. And
I don't know when that is.
It's like the 1800s, 1600s, that era. But it's
when was this made? Sorry?
Oh, 2000s, but it's set in Edo. That's why it takes on the Edo persona.
Yeah.
So the idea of corruption, political corruption, and using brothels in order to instill fear and this sort of thing very prevalent.
Have sex and be fearful of us.
But it's actually really serious how they use brothels in this too.
Okay.
Is this Miraculous Ladybugs?
No. This,
oh, I'm so confused.
Samurai Champloo. But it's got two central samurai. This is the first time I've seen it. And they've got these really, like, badass kind of personalities where they just kind of go through. They're kind of wanderers. One uses, like, breakdancing as part of his fighting style. He's like a street fighter.
Hang on a minute. Breakdancing wasn't invented until later.
Exactly.
On.
But he's got, like, this afro frizziness. So he kind of looks like he's part of that era that doesn't even exist. And even the whole show has this aesthetic where it does, like, record scratches between transitions. And it has this very, like, 70s aesthetic to this Edo period. It's really interesting to watch. Okay. And the other characters are, like, this really prim, proper samurai. The aesthetics has this bold line style that's real. I love bold line styles in animation because, one, it's hard to pull off, and two, it just looks so distinct when you see those really strong brush strokes. Like, you can see, and it makes the action seem more dynamic. And how they do foreshortening in this, as with most action driven anime, it's just incredible. Like, so well done, rotoscoped for some actions, otherwise it's just really creative and really kinetic. So really like it. That's all I've really been watching, sorry.
Oh, that's all good. So, what I've been watching is literally the three Star Wars animated series that are 3D. So, I've watched the first episode of season 2 of Star Wars Resistance, which came out.
Oh, yeah, I watched that too.
And that was really fun. I thought it wasn't as great as... Michael, what are you doing?
Fixing my mic stand.
How exactly? That seems to be making it worse.
Yes, so it wasn't as good as the season finale, obviously, because it's just introducing it. And it didn't have as much high stakes as I would have liked, because it was just...
Higher stakes was terrible. It had this alien-like parody where there was, like, a something haunting them. It's a little BB-8 unit, which is, like, the size of their knee. It's like...
Why did you point to me when you did that?
No, I was pointing to my knee.
What was down there?
No, but it's, like, this little thing, and they're terrified of this. It's like, kick it. You don't even need it.
It was out for revenge, and it was... being like
what it had a broken screen. It was like, oh, I can't see you, I'm even more threatening now.
And electrocuted Kaz like 3 times.
We're gonna flail around in the dark.
Ben, Kaz is stupid.
I don't know how he's alive still.
It's a miracle that him and Niku even got to season 2.
Okay, I watched seasons 2 and 3 of Star Wars Rebels, and it is really great seeing how it grows as a show, like with the storytelling, with the production, how it looks, aesthetics, and like how the characters grow as well. And yeah, it's really fun to watch all that.
Is this one of those?
It's not what we watched.
No.
What did we watch?
The Clone Wars.
We watched
Clone Wars. Oh, yeah, there's clones in it.
This is before.
People with really bad New Zealand accents.
Okay, so.
I was just going to say, is this one of those shows where they start with, where the main character's voice actor started young and ages up? Like,
no, he was
always an adult. Okay,
but he does have a different, slightly different voice in the later seasons.
Because I feel like that should be something that's used more often. I've only ever seen it done in Steven Universe, and that worked really well.
Yeah, it did. But no, they just had all adult voice actors.
I guess like he's what, 19 or something in the show, isn't he? The Rebels main guy, Ezra.
He's the same age as Luke Skywalker.
Oh, 19, okay.
Well, at the end of it, yeah. But he starts out as like 16 or 15.
Okay, so generally the voice doesn't change as much, but yeah.
But it's really fun to watch, and the action also gets really good. Like, the lightsaber fighting. In the first season, it wasn't that great, but now it's gotten to like a really good standard.
Mm.
And that, yeah, it's fun to watch. And Darth Maul's in it, and he dies again.
He's very good at that.
He is good at dying, yes.
He always gets chopped in half for some reason. They just don't like his waist.
Yeah. No, this time he got sliced down the middle, like a hot dog.
What?
He got sliced down like that.
Is that how he dies?
Yeah.
I thought Obi-Wan kills him like...
Yeah, by slicing him down there, the chest. Like.
Oh.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan's savage.
Yeah, I know. To be fair, it was either him or Maul.
Nah, he could have just backflipped over him.
And then let him fall into lava.
Yeah.
Except for there's no lava, there's just a fire pit.
Look, I assume the second you have the high ground, lava just appears beneath you.
Okay.
I don't know how that works, but I think that's how Star Wars does its logic.
Yeah, I also watched Star Wars The Clone Wars for this podcast, and that's about it. A lot of Star Wars for me. And we're going to be talking about Star Wars very soon as well.
Okay, question. What's Star Wars?
So, it's about this guy called Captain Kirk.
Oh, cool.
He meets his friend.
I don't know what he's doing.
His friend, his name is Mr.
Lemon Nimoy.
Leonard Nimoy. Then they go out on the Battlestar Galactica through a Stargate and have adventures.
Is this before they see the Mass Effect relays?
Yes. And then a character... Then the Rick and Morty...
Just before they see the relays from Mass Effect.
And then Rick and Morty come by and say, wubba lubba dub dub, then throw pickles at them. And then that's when Anakin Skywalker says, I hate pickles, they're coarse and rough and get everywhere.
So this is before we're back.
Yes.
Okay.
No, but this is after the podcast gets cancelled.
Is this a... What are we doing today, Ben? Just go on.
Okay, so... Now that we've talked about Toons with Toon Toon Toon, now I'm going to explain some production notes for The Clone Wars. So what's going to happen with the information for these 3 episodes that I'll be doing?
Today, there's 3? I watched 4.
No. For the 3 episodes I'll be doing on the podcast. Do you know how I'm doing 3 podcast episodes on The Clone Wars?
Nope.
We explained this.
He said this like 5 times.
I know we were doing more than one. I didn't know it was 3 specifically.
It's 3. I'm doing 3 of my favorite arcs.
Oh, okay.
So today I'm going to be talking about the production of the Clone Wars. Then next week I'm going to be talking about specifically the arc and the production of that because it's a bit interesting.
Oh, okay. That was the question.
The one after that I'm going to be talking about the showrunner Dave Filoni.
Oh, so we're going to split up the production notes.
Yes.
It's clever to save time.
Actually, there's still so many production notes. Because I have all the Blu-rays and stuff, so I have a lot of resources.
There can't be that many. It happened, they commissioned a Star Wars series and they made it.
Michael, that's already more information than you gave us on We're Back.
I didn't tell why.
You didn't say anything.
You didn't even say what animations. Oh, you said Amblin.
It's Amblimation in the UK.
Okay.
Okay, so the Clone Wars.
Steven Spielberg animated it all himself.
Goodness, Ben. No, Mike. Oh, what's your name?
I'm Stefan 2. That's Ben 3.
In 2002, the release of Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones, George Lucas wanted to create an animated series for the Clone Wars. Being busy with the upcoming Episode 3 in 3 years' time, he couldn't really work on the series, so he gave it to Jendy Tarkovsky, which was the Star Wars Clone Wars series, the 2D one, which Stefan really likes.
I really like that aesthetic. I can't bang on about how interesting and unique it looks.
Well, Lucas himself, he considered this as a pilot series to see if something like this could work in the future. And that's where we come to Star Wars Celebration in April 2005. Star Wars Celebration is basically the Star Wars Comic-Con run by Lucasfilm. Yeah, so in 2005...
They're known for celebrating Star Wars.
You know Kathleen Kennedy produced We're Back?
Yes,
oh
I did.
Oh my goodness. Stop bringing it to We're Back, even though I'm also guilty of that.
So, Star Wars Celebration, April 2005. This was just a few weeks before Episode 3 was due to come out. Lucas announced that he would be developing a new 3D Clone Wars series with Dave Filoni as the supervising director and showrunner. So, for those who don't know, just a very quick backstory on him. Filoni had previously directed episodes of Avatar The Last Airbender, including the two-parter opening and the two-parter ending.
When was,
That came out in 2005. Oh, sorry. The first season came out 2005 or 6 and then 2008.
So this was alongside the Clone Wars?
Yes. So he only did the first season of Avatar.
Oh, okay. Yep.
And yeah, so people were looking forward to him bringing his take to Star Wars, and Lucas would also be supervising the whole show as well. And as fans had heard rumblings that there would be another Clone Wars series, they were happy to hear it confirmed.
Okay, so that seems optimistic. Where did the movie come from?
I'll get to it.
Because that seems like this is good news, and then the movie happened.
Don't forget, this is 2005. The Clone Wars series premiered in 2008.
Okay, yeah.
Like so I'll get to that.
3 years to get a train wreck out.
Originally, when he was tasked with the show, Filoni had wanted to focus on a small group of characters, and it only involved characters like Anakin Skywalker and Obi-Wan only occasionally. So very similar to Star Wars Rebels, how it focuses on a small group of rebels and you occasionally have some big name characters in there. But however, George Lucas wanted to be a lot bigger than what Filoni had imagined. So he wanted more characters, more locations, and he wanted to be as interesting as possible for a show to be. Despite being very action heavy, Lucas wanted to be very focused on character, which I think might be a bit of backlash to the prequels. Seeming as the prequels, you know, they didn't have the best character.
They had the best characters.
Yeah, but they didn't have a lot of character beats and stuff.
To be fair, they're the most quotable character moments ever. We all know Anakin hates sand.
And how he thinks it's coarse, it's rough, and it's irritating, and it gets everywhere.
We know how he loves Padme, I think.
How he's a very creepy stalker.
He's a very creepy stalker. How he killed all the women and the children Tusken Raiders.
And then they fall in love and kiss immediately after.
Yeah, well, we know all this because it's all great character stuff.
Is totally. This still Star Wars?
Yes.
You can go back to your phone.
So the design of the show was inspired by Jendy Tartakovsky's series, as well as the 60s puppet show Thunderbirds, which is...
What?
I knew they looked like marionettes. I've been saying this for years.
No, but how does that make sense? It's like, oh, we're taking another Star Wars show as inspiration, and 1960s Thunderbirds about people with ships and... Now, how does that work?
It's like, they're very blocky. Yeah. Or at least originally they were very blocky.
I guess...
Yeah, they also wanted all the character designs to be very highly stylized, like in the Thunderbird series.
Okay. That does make sense.
Yeah. What's the name of the planet they're on?
Umbara.
Okay.
UM.
Because I just googled Star Wars Clone Wars Purple Planet, and then there's a whole wiki entry page of Battle of Unidentified Purple Planet.
Here, let me...
Unidentified Purple Planet.
To create the series, they used the 3D program Maya to create all the models and environments.
Oh, really?
This is a Maya production.
Yes.
Oh, that's amazing.
Animation and rendering was done in Lucasfilm Singapore and later at Polygon Pictures as the series progressed.
Mm.
And the final edits were brought together at Skywalker Ranch itself. Do you guys know much about Skywalker Ranch?
Where George Lucas lives.
He doesn't live there.
Doesn't he?
No. So basically, as after Star Wars A New Hope came out in cinemas, he built a ranch and called it Skywalker Ranch, and that's where a lot of like film meetings and stuff were done.
Does it only have blue milk?
No. It has more. It has green milk. There was no use of rotoscoped animation whatsoever. However, they did use some motion capture, which actually surprised me because it doesn't look like it, especially in the earlier seasons. Some interesting facts about the production. After the first 12 episodes were storyboarded, George Lucas decided they wouldn't do any more storyboards.
What?
You heard me correctly. So apart from the first 12 episodes of the first season, no storyboards were done for the entire show.
Okay, to put it in perspective, when you usually do an animation, you start with your storyboards. You're missing a kind of important step there, George Lucas.
Just a bit.
How were these even made?
That's what I'm going to get into. So with the preliminary low-res models that they had, they would pre-visualize every episode in a program called ZViz in America. ZViz, not Z. Stupid. Why is it Z and not Z?
Because it's a zebra, not a zebra.
Okay. Okay. So they, they blocked out all the episodes in a program called ZViz, and after some adjustment with how the crew worked, because a lot of people would be very used to storyboarding, right? So basically...
Yes, they would, very much
basically,
so.
They would be storyboarding in the 3D space, but also with blocking the shots as well.
That's weird.
Not...
Like, you really have to have faith in your program and that it won't crash. Because if those files crash, you've lost that frame.
But then again, it's all very preliminary stuff. Like, they're not doing the most complex things, but they found it worked better for their show and their pipeline because it would get the job quicker. Like, it would get it done quicker. They would be able to actually know what it's going to look like in the 3D space compared to drawing it and hoping it translates well.
I guess there is a point to it. So it's almost like they're skipping storyboard going straight to animatic.
Yeah, pretty much like that.
But that in itself is very complicated. Like, that is not an easy...
Yeah, again, it took the it took all the crew a bit of an adjustment period to get to that stage. But after that, they all really liked that process. And Dave Filoni has also said that it made him a better filmmaker, being able to do that.
On the fly.
Yes.
Does he still stand by this production method in his later works?
I would say so. Because I haven't seen any storyboards for any of the other shows.
No, and you have some of the art books, so that's...
Mm.
It's odd. So for the early episodes, the first 12, are there any evidence of their storyboards available to the public?
Not that I've seen, no.
That's odd.
Mm. So when making the 3D series, they approached many aspects of the series like they would a live action series, with the cinematography, the story and the lighting, and even the widescreen format being very similar to what a live action series would be.
Even the actors. In fact, it was just a normal film.
So, the first 4 episodes that they made were combined to make a limited release feature film in August 2008, a few months before the series premiere. The story revolved around Anakin Skywalker and his new relationship with his Padawan, Ahsoka Tano. Together, they would have to fight off droids and Sith alike as they rescued the son of Jabba the Hutt. And guess what? It was not well liked by critics or fans.
No!
With lots of criticisms with the animation.
The arc itself?
No, he's talking about the first film that was released.
Oh, yeah, that was real bad received.
Very badly received, yes.
No, but that's a terrible way to start a show.
I know.
Having its TV movie be terrible.
It wasn't a TV movie, though. It was released in cinemas for a limited amount of time.
Okay, that was the problem. It should have been a TV movie because people are a lot less critical of TV movies.
That is very true. And, yeah, a lot of people also... did not like Ahsoka whatsoever. They found her too annoying. And they didn't like the fact that they gave Anakin Skywalker a Padawan.
No, because it doesn't make sense practically. Like, Anakin is not fit to have a Padawan. He killed a bunch of Tusken Raiders. Why do they give him...
They don't know about that, though.
It's obvious.
Yes, Michael?
I actually don't know a lot of Star Wars things. What's a Padawan?
Padawan is like...
an apprentice. Yeah, unpaid.
Oh, okay. Like a carpenter.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like his carpenter friend.
So, learning...
oh, Jesus analogy.
Well, no. Anakin is like Jesus because he was born with the virgin birth thing.
Oh, yeah. Remember,
except, you know, Jesus didn't go killing
everyone. Yeah, remember
when
Jesus cut all those kids' heads off in the Bible?
Classic times. Despite all this criticism, Lucas and Filoni were not deterred by this and continued on. The first season itself did garner a lot of positive reviews, with the first episode getting almost 40 million viewers.
Wow.
Can I Which ask? Is,
that's double the population of here.
No, it isn't.
A while ago.
Yes. But that was the biggest premiere on Cartoon Network at the time.
Wow.
Yeah, I
was
know.
Its animation much different to the film? Did they change anything when they saw the bad reception of the film? Or
honestly, I think because they were the first four episodes produced, I think they just put a bit more effort into the animation. Because in the film, the animation of the like the facial animation is just atrocious.
Was Favoli still in charge of the film?
Who?
Dave
Filoni.
Yes,
he was.
His name.
Filoni. Yes, he was. He's the guy with the hat and the wolf shirt.
Why is it that the film was not good? I've seen bits of the film. It's not good. And yet, the show is good.
I honestly do not know.
If it's the exact same team and the exact same director, how does that happen?
I don't know. Maybe so odd. Maybe this arc was George Lucas's, like, mostly his ideas.
Oh, great. Okay, lovely.
Yeah, so maybe it was that, or I don't know. But even though George Lucas still did have a lot to say with the story, maybe this was his specific story, I don't know.
Okay.
And then again, also, like, all the writers who were working on this is, like, the first time working on something probably this big.
Mm.
So they might have gotten a bit...
shell-shocked?
Yeah. But, yeah, who knows? But I didn't research that part of it,
though. I don't think there is a reason. It's just mainly a fact of... what works in film doesn't work in TV series.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably that too. So, yeah. So, the first season, it got a lot of good reviews and obviously got renewed for another season.
And that's where they started kicking things up.
Yeah, so many fans and even Dave Filoni himself felt that they really upped their game from the season 3 onwards.
Oh, getting, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, getting
visuals are cinematic.
Definitely. So, yeah, getting more mature in storytelling and visually and becoming more aesthetically pleasing. And while... the characters would always be upgraded, like, throughout the season. Like, all the objects and the characters would be upgraded while they're doing the show. So, like, in the first three seasons, there were, like, six versions of one of the ships.
Mm.
And, yeah, they'll do that all the time. But all the characters got, like, a major upgrade in their designs in season three as well.
Yep.
And I really like the new designs compared to the old ones because I thought they were just... yeah.
Obi-Wan's beard still looks like a block of balsa wood.
It does. Again... based on some puppets, marionette puppets. And yeah. And
you know, Star Wars marionette television show? I'd watch that. Like Thunderbirds.
So they do the Clone Wars again, but this time with actual puppets.
Yeah, yeah. So now they have an excuse for making all the characters look like they're made of balsa wood.
And they do that one song from Chicago the entire time.
Oh!
Chicago!
He had it coming. Is that the one?
We both reached for the gun.
Oh, no, I was thinking of I Got No Strings to Hold Me Down.
That's Pinocchio.
That's Pinocchio, not Chicago.
That's the same thing.
We got no strings.
They're both Disney.
Chicago isn't Disney. What the hell are you talking about?
The last two episodes of season three of the Padawan Lost Ark, they wanted to create a world which was teeming with tree branches, vines, and shrubbery.
But George Lucas didn't let them, and so they filmed it on Tatooine.
No.
Because of Monty Python, the word shrubbery will never not be funny.
No, that is a point.
Yeah.
So, however, that would mean creating and manually duplicating hundreds of objects, wow, which would take a lot of time.
Then manually duplicate the objects?
Yes.
Can you do like a batch duplication?
Well, that... let me get into it.
They manually did Control-C and Control-V.
At first,
just
they
drag.
Were... at first, they were going to just paint on splat texture onto tree branches, but it looked way too messy. But then a technical director found a way to basically paint on objects onto a tree. And from then on... that would change how they would do any, like, environmental backgrounds for the rest of the show. And I think it looks so good, like, compared to what it used to be where everything was just flat. Now everything, like, could have some, like, plants and everything. And
the side effect is that it makes everything purple. It's the glitch in the code.
It was only this arc.
You didn't say no.
It was just this arc, as Stefan said. And yeah, so that really changed how they like showed all the planets and everything. And I found that really good.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It was rumored that the show was losing money as the show kept going over budget and George Lucas putting in millions of dollars himself to keep the show looking as good as it does.
Mm. When was this particular arc produced?
This one, so this is season 4. It would have been around 2011-12.
Okay, so this is just prior to the buyout, right?
That happened in 2012.
Yeah.
I find it funny that this, the season 4 of The Clone Wars, this cinematic masterpiece of television is released, what, maybe a year or two after the Doctor Who Dreamland episode?
Yeah.
So, remember guys, if you watch the Imbara arc, it is the same quality, apparently, as Dreamland Doctor
Who. Just that the Lucasfilm animation officers just had posters of Doctor Who Dreamland.
Like, this is what we're aiming for.
Yeah, just to keep them going.
One day we'll get that animation and those foot slides.
Okay, so a bit of just a few notes about the Imbara arc.
So Imbara's a planet, it's purple.
No, okay. I'm gonna say the story summary and then a few notes about it. So the story summary: the Republic has waged war on the planet Imbara.
Anakin wages war on everybody.
Anakin Skywalker leads the 501st Legion into battle, with Clone Captain Rex being the second in command.
Rex from way back?
No.
Ah.
However, Skywalker is replaced by General Pong Krell, a leader known for his effectiveness, but with high casualties for the clones he commands. Rex and the other troopers must try to keep themselves alive, not only from the treacherous planet of Imbara, but also from Pong Krell himself.
Ooh.
Nice summary.
Thank you.
So much better when you write them down.
I know. So this is the first time that Captain Rex has been shown with his new Phase 2 armor. So in Star Wars The Clone Wars, Star Wars Attack of the Clones and Star Wars Revenge of the Sith, there's a difference in the clone armor. And this is the first time that Captain Rex has this one from Revenge of the Sith.
Oh.
However, his helmet is a hybrid of both of the two types of helmets.
Oh, like model cars.
Yes, kind of.
No, it's kind of a way of slowly bridging the gap between it. I think that works well, where you have it start as one completely different, and then as the series goes, you start to...
But the thing is, he's the only clone trooper who has that hybrid helmet.
Okay.
Because he custom made it himself, because the visor is a lot bigger, so you can see more. Don't know why other clones didn't do it. That's the one thing I don't like about Stormtrooper helmets. You can't really see much out of them.
Look, Stormtroopers don't shoot well anyhow. I don't exactly think they need it.
Anyway, so that's one of the notes. There is a clone trooper in this arc. His name is Apo. And he was like the second in command clone of Pong Krell.
Yep.
So he had a distinct arrow on his helmet, which is very reminiscent of Avatar Aang's arrow on his head.
Oh, so he's Aang.
No, he's not Aang.
Can he control the full ailments?
With him being named Apo, very similar to Appa, the flying bison in the show.
Oh, so he's a flying bison avatar.
No, I'm just saying his character is a homage to the Avatar
series.
No,
it's not a homage. I reckon that's Appa. That's Appa, whatever his name is. It's a waterbender.
No.
They're just not giving him his abilities.
No.
What are you talking about?
Okay, so...
I've seen any of this.
The Umbaran soldiers were inspired by David Lynch's Dune film.
What a very odd comparison. Well, the second you say Star Wars and inspired by David Lynch, no. What?
Look, no, Star Wars is directly inspired by Dune.
Well, some of it, yeah.
Yeah.
A clone trooper named Fives in this arc, he has a very similar conversation on the comms as Han Solo does on the Death Star.
Oh, and he's like, hey, no, we're not, yeah, I'm fine. I'm not Han Solo.
Exactly.
The dialogue.
Do you remember that conversation in the arc?
It is a funny dialogue.
Yes. Pong Krell is the same species as Obi-Wan's friend, Dexter Jetstar.
Does the guy in the arc also say that he's not Han Solo?
No.
Oh.
But did you hear that last fact?
Yeah, that makes sense. Jetstar. They do look.
Yes.
Dexter Jetstar was the guy, the bartender in Attack of the Clones.
Oh, the guy that owns a 50s diner in space. Yeah.
They're the same species.
I found that scene in that episode of Star Wars very charming. Like, I like how there's a 50s diner in a space horizont world. Also, I like it. With this guy, is that species ever mentioned again besides him and Dexter Biner, whatever his name is.
Jetstar. And I don't think so. Not that I remember off the top of my head, no.
Hmm.
Actually, he is, but I'll get into that the next time I do an episode on the Clone Wars.
Okay, yeah.
So, Walter Murch, who was the editor of Apocalypse Now,
worked on this arc and even directed an episode. I know, that's why it's a very... Like, this arc is very war-inspired, like, yeah, with its visuals and the cinematography and all that. So, yeah, having someone who actually worked on a war film like Apocalypse Now... Yeah, it helps
also fraught with its own financial and story difficulties.
Mm. And the last fact is General Pongkrell uses the first appearance of a double-bladed hinged lightsaber, which is now infamous for the recent D23 footage from The Rise of Skywalker.
So many Star Wars facts.
So yeah, this is the first appearance of that lightsaber that Rey has now in Switchblade
Cyber.
Is this still canon?
Yes.
Canon, yes.
The Clone Wars is still canon, otherwise I wouldn't be talking about it.
Ah.
Because I've only seen and read the canon things.
So it's not one of those 140,000 books Legends. That they that's no longer canon.
And yeah, that is Kinnean. Those are all the facts, and that Canoon. Was the story summary and production notes of the Clone Wars and this arc. Yes, it was.
Opening thoughts. Michael, start us off.
Ben, what did you think of Star Wars, The Clone Wars, Disc 2, Season 4?
As a person who, like, prepared this, these are probably my favourite episodes.
They were good.
I really like them. So yeah, like, the first time I watched this is back when I was in year 12. That's the last year of high school in Australia. I was watching it on my phone, which had cracks in it.
During the exams, Ben never graduated.
No, not during the exams, no. But yeah, and even just on my phone, watching it with a slight audio lag because I was watching it on a streaming site, I was super impressed by it. Mm. And again, I still am now that I can watch it in HD.
How much did the audio lag? Did the whole thing finish and then you had to listen to the audio?
There was about like a half second to a second audio delay.
Oh, unbearable.
Yeah, but that was what
Look,
I did.
Look, it helps that they're wearing helmets for most of the time.
Oh, so you can't tell.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, it is one of my favourite Clone Wars arcs and one of my favourite Star Wars stories in general. And like the cinematography, the lighting, the character development and the characters' interactions and how everyone interacts with this new general coming in. I just found it all super compelling and I am still, yeah, it still is really great for me. Stefan.
Me. Okay. So the season 4 of The Clone Wars, the cinematics of the aesthetics are just gorgeous. Like they are, I can't say how much the lighting has improved. Michael keeps making jokes that it's purple, but I like the purple. It's dynamic and how sometimes
they
have...
Was it purple? I didn't notice.
It was blue.
How sometimes they had the solar flares. It's just got really nice lighting effects. It's just really great. But aside from that, I like how... obviously, the characters in all these are all clones. But through the animation and through their storytelling, you're able to distinguish that each of these clones has a personality. They've all got the exact same voice. And yet... they all seem different, and you connect to all these seemingly faceless characters. Like, in the Attack of the Clones, they're all just...
Yeah, in the films, they're just clones. But
yeah, that's
in this
it.
Series, they actually develop the characters and, behind those masks.
And especially
and
in
helmets.
This arc, it really emphasizes that these are people. These are men who are fighting for a cause they believe in. And I think, story-wise, it is a very powerful story. And I almost... thought it had really powerful racism tones where it says it's Sully, where these are men trying to fight for the cause they believe in, and this guy's like being brutal towards them, saying, I don't care if you guys die, you're just clones, you're nothing. And it really is a powerful story. Mm. And it's still a kid's story.
Yeah.
And it's still got its action, which I think is a bit there's a bit too much action. Like
the first two episodes especially.
There is a lot, yeah.
There's a lot. Like it's well choreographed and I do agree that it's well done, but at times, I'm just going, okay, bring back this controversy. I'm more about the conspiracy rather than just, bombs.
Yeah, my least favorite episode in this is the second episode, which is just almost pure action.
But in terms of military choreography and how they do their battle plans and work out, it's interesting. It's really intriguing.
And something that is really good as well is that even though it's at night, it's all still very clear.
Yeah, you can still see everything.
Yeah, which is a problem I have with a lot of live action things whenever it's at night. Oh no, you can't see anything. It's horrible.
Well, you have complete control over the lighting in an animated landscape.
But you still do in a live action thing because most of the time it's going to be green screened.
Okay.
That's true.
The final fight scene in Venom. What the hell was going on?
Never saw Venom. Refused to give them my money.
So actual opening thoughts, Michael.
That was pretty good. I usually don't take to like animated children's series. Like I usually don't watch them. But I thought this was okay.
Again, this is a lot more mature than a lot of the other arcs, so...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's why I think I probably enjoyed it more. Like, it is simplified. I'm not going to say it's like...
Yeah, it wasn't overly complex or anything.
But... No, no, no. But it had some weirdly authentic, like, military tactics in it that I thought was interesting. Again, I like when there's a certain level of darkness in kids' media. This I'm not certainly saying this is specifically for kids. Like, I think if you're an adult, you could probably enjoy this.
Which, like me.
Yeah, it's not something I'd usually take to, but I thought it was pretty good. It's reasonably more complex than I was expecting it to be. Again, I like the military overtones, and yeah, it's a different story, I guess, or a different type of story in the Star Wars universe, and I think it shows how occasionally versatile the Star Wars universe can be in terms of the tones of stories you can
tell. And how you don't need to rely on the main Skywalkers to tell an intriguing story. Like, this only has Obi-Wan for 2 minutes, it has Anakin for one.
Yeah, I think all this broader, or like this peripheral canonical stuff, I think is more interesting because the films seem to have this, like, hesitation to move away from the Skywalker lineage.
Definitely.
So yeah, I'm more, even though I haven't seen a lot of it, I think I'm more interested about, like, that Old Republic stuff, or the stuff that moves away from, you know, the core narrative of the Star Wars films that's been basically the same for 40 years.
No, something about the Clone Wars series is that it really does focus on the clones in a lot of episodes, and those tend to be some of my favorite.
All voiced
episodes
by the same guy?
Yes, they are.
Oh, wow.
Every single had a clone. Blast.
So you get a pretty good range, even though they're all basically meant to be biologically identical.
Exactly. Like, they all have the same mentality and even a very similar personality, but they're all still very different.
They all have different agendas, which I think, with their voice and with their animations and whatnot, it still tells you, like, I don't remember their nicknames.
Okay, so there were Captain Kicks. Rex, Five, Kicks, Tup, Jesse, Hardcase,
Dogma and
Tup.
Dweeb, Captain Screw Eyes.
No.
But I remember the ones who were gung-ho about getting into their ship and blowing things up. He looked like... He had tattoo of like a symbol on
his head. That was Jesse. That one was Jesse.
Yeah, he looked like a person who would be like, gung-ho, ready to go in. And Captain Rex looks like he'd be the more cool, calm leader.
And then you have Dogma, who is like very uptight and like... He hunches a bit as well.
Yeah, like, there's little subtle things that they do for these characters that, although they're all the same, you can still tell that they're different characters. And I actually felt really sad when one of the characters dies in this raid. And it's like, that's really bad, but they know it's for the cause. And I thought it was really, really good. Well done how they managed that.
I liked the battle stuff. It reminded me of Apocalypse Now, and it's weird that you say that the director of photography or the editor or
the
whatever
editor,
from those films worked on it. But, yes.
Yeah, the battle choreography.
My thoughts are very simple.
I know, but the battle choreography was really good. And, like...
I mean, it's kind of rough around the edges. I'm presuming, like, just from looking at it, that's not mo-capped. It looks keyframed.
Yeah.
Or purely keyframed.
As Ben said, they didn't use mocap or...
reference footage.
Or rotoscoping. Yeah.
That's surprising, because it's smooth enough when it looks like it could be taken from reference footage. If not... I mean, obviously it looks keyframe, but it's so hard to do that just from your head, basically.
I mean, all of The Lion King was keyframed.
Yeah, but that's another level. The new one. Oh, really?
Yeah. That was
entirely
keyframed.
Oh, that's weird.
That's weird.
But they would have to study reference footage, surely.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Do you think they studied reference footage of intergalactic clones?
No. Okay, back to the Clone Wars. The animation and aesthetic. So the nighttime planet, what do you guys think of having a nighttime planet being the location?
Is it always night on the planet?
Yes.
Like that. I like, because Star Wars always has that thing when planets are just stand-ins for isolated areas. Yeah. Like, they're always like singular biomes. I like that. Like, they need a place that's a setting. That's at night. That's a battlefield. So they have a whole planet where it's just that. Great. Does it like not have a sun or something? I didn't catch that.
I don't think so, no. But like, I like how everything also like kind of glows. Like, do you know how we were talking about Love, Death and Robots with that first episode? How there was all that black light?
Yeah. But this whole thing looked like it was illuminated by an aurora or something.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, in Avatar, the blue people one, where you've got the plants that have the little...
The bioluminescence
things.
In it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I really found that, like, a great way to try to light everything.
And it also sets the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is more of a sleepy place in that these militaristic forces are breaking that calm.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether good or bad. Like, yeah, so it's interesting how they do that.
Good stuff, Lucasfilm.
And also, they had another tentacle monster in this.
Of course, they got to have a tentacle monster in every single Star Wars, apparently. Yeah. They all look the same. Are they all the same creature? They just go to a different planet?
In the next arc, there's also another one.
It's like the Deus Ex Machina. It's like, how do we beat this relentless force? We don't have lightsabers. Throw into that thing, the Sarlacc pit.
It'd be funny if it was just the same guy. Like, the tentacle monster is the same dude. And every appearance, he has, like, another bandage.
Oh, it's Anthony Daniels.
It's Anthony Daniels. What? Why?
Because he's in every single Star Wars project.
Oh, so he's going to be the next, like, after C-3PO, after this arc finishes in Rise of Skywalker, it's going to be Anthony Daniels playing a Sarlacc monster who's going to appear in every film.
There we go. Perfect. Something I want to say before you go on is I really found it interesting how you said that they don't storyboard it. I found it interesting you said that because one of the things that made it really cinematic for me, and I always wondered how they did it, is a lot of the shots are tracking shots while characters are moving, which are obvious you can do in 3D. But if you're storyboarding that, that's a hard shot to storyboard because you can't keep saying every frame, camera is moving this way, camera moving this way. So the fact that this is all blocked out, pre-visualized, makes these cinematic pans make more sense.
Yeah,
that's
definitely.
That's a quite like militaristic aesthetic though. Like you'd find a lot of like frontline war like documentation footage.
Has panning.
Has track because you have to. You've got to run alongside him and film.
Yeah, but even like there's a part where Rex is like talking to the troops and it just focuses on him as it slowly moves around and you see all the stormtrooper, clone helmets.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of focus on like military authenticity in it, which I thought was interesting. But not overblown and obnoxious.
It's
like
enough for a kid to understand.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like ridiculous and dark and to the point when it causes a weird tonal dissonance, like in Rogue One, a Rogue One story.
Yeah, Rogue One was a bit too much.
It's just okay. Rogue One was so bleak; it was hysterical.
Yeah,
you got these little teddy bears like violently killing people. It's just that. Like this was a nice mixture of like the exploration of adult themes, but still maintaining. You know, it's for kids. It's in a universe that's ultimately family friendly when you get down to it.
So before we get into like the twist of this arc, do you want to talk about the animation, Stefan?
Something animation. Well, I just thought the animation was all really smooth and really crisp. There was one particular point that I really liked. I told Ben this. Michael, I'm not sure if you picked it up, but
I don't pick anything
when
up.
When Fives and Hard K's, I think they basically.
So you pronounce her name? It's a cultural thing.
No. They basically steal the enemy ships and try to pilot them, but they never pilot them before. And ships are very hard to animate because it's hard to make them look like they're actually moving as opposed to just being dragged across a room, dragged across a space. They actually feel like that they have no idea how to pilot these things because you see them spinning around. The velocity and how they use the acceleration is a bit jagged. Like, it's not a smooth ship fly. And I found that although it looks kind of seamless and you just look at it and go, oh yeah, they're flying the ship terribly. There must have been so much thought in how they make it look like that they can barely fly these things.
Yeah. Whenever you see a weird little detail in animation that looks like completely incidental, you know one person spent like 9.5 hours trying to meticulously code out a path for it.
There's people who would have looked at that motion path, played that motion path of that ship flying over and looped it, just going, okay, how can I make this look more like an amateur is flying it?
Yeah.
And you can see, like, when it spins around and they're just, like, it just looks like it's kind of just flailing about in...
It's doing doughies in space.
Yeah, it's like, that's not bad animation. That's them thinking, how could I make this more realistic? And I found those little things absolutely incredible.
Has there ever been a scene of drunk driving in the Star Wars universe?
Oh, there might. I'm not sure.
It would have to be. That'd be hysterical. Don't drink and drive. But in Star Wars, very funny. Like, what can you hit up there? It's so big.
I mean, in Coruscant, you can hit anything.
Space is so big. Did I ever tell you I played that video game Elite Dangerous? I thought that'd be fun. Then you realize how big space is and how boring that is.
Okay, so the twist of this arc is that Pong Krell, who's been getting the clones in a lot of danger, he's actually on the Separatist side.
Yeah, it turns out the jerk was a jerk all along.
Ah, yes, the obvious jerk turned out to be the bad guy.
I would have never worked that out. Like, I thought Rex was going to be the bad guy. He was always so nice.
Rex was so nice, the little boy, though.
Exactly. Not Wes Beck! Oh my goodness!
So, Captain Rex, you actually thought he was going to be the bad guy?
No, I actually thought Dogma was going to be the big bad guy at the end. Like, when he started turning on them, I thought, oh, maybe he's going to do like an uprising against Rex and try to overtake him. But then it showed it was Krell, and Krell's just like, yeah, no, I was using you. And they're like, but why?
It's director.
Yeah, because I can.
That's a direct dialogue. That's a script.
Something that really impacted me, like, not only on the first viewing, but in all my viewings of this arc, was when General Krell sent the clones to fight off the other Umbarans who were dressed as clone troopers.
That was really
dark.
And
then you find out that they've been shooting each other. And, yeah, and I think, like, Captain Rex's realization of that and how he gets them all to stop and think about what they're doing is really powerful.
He just takes off his helmet and really runs to them just saying, please stop, stop, we're all the same. Like, that is a powerful moment.
It is. And, yeah, and so, like, the turning point against Krell. And I love that.
Is Krell the one? I always mention this.
But it's not the blue guy.
No, is he the one that they brought that was so popular? He was, like, originally deemed non-canon.
That's the blue guy.
Thrawn, that's it. They all sound the same.
Krell and Thrawn don't sound the same.
What's Thrawn?
He's in Star Wars Rebels.
He was like a super cool guy or something.
He's a blue alien man.
And they were like, he's so cool. And then Disney was like, not canon anymore. Everyone's like, ah.
And now he is canon.
And now he is canon.
And he is cool again.
Oh, he's cool.
I actually think his voice is
Disney approved.
Yeah. And then after they find out that Krell is evil, it comes to one of my favorite shots. So I'm going to show Michael and Stefan something on my phone. That's one of my favorite shots in all of the Clone Wars.
That's lit really nicely, even though it doesn't make any sense that it's lit underneath.
Yeah.
This is now a weekly segment, which is Ben passes around his phone and the audience has no frame of reference for what we're looking at.
It's of the clone troopers like headed in a V formation to Krell, and they're all just walking in a line.
Put it on the Twitter, Ben.
Maybe I will.
I like how they do mist in this one, especially.
Yeah, a lot of atmospheric
mist
in this.
Mist is really hard to render in 3D because it takes ages. So yes, it does. Fact that everything is covered in mist means that there would have been a lot of...
It's not hard to render. It's simulated. It's just that it takes a long time render.
And also, you've got to realize mist affects lighting quite a bit, especially in 3D. So
there's a lot of like subsurface scattering in like mist because it like changes the way light refracts or something like that.
It's not...
No, subsurface is for like solid objects only. Yeah. No, but it would change
refraction
the way, like, light.
And all
I know animation. That's why I'm on a podcast.
Hey, you know more about the lighting than I do. I didn't know.
I just said that mist causes subsurface scattering. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
But there's a lot of refraction and stuff in that lighting.
Yeah, just say refraction. It makes you sound smart.
I like when the clones confront Krell, it's the only time where the commander base is completely black, like it's all blacked out, and he just turns to them and he says the Palpatine line, oh, it's treason, is it?
Yes, he does. And then he uses his hinged double bladed lightsabers and kills a bunch of clones, and he does.
I love how the lightsabers illuminate the room, and also in terms of aesthetic, it makes it seem completely hopeless, because it's like, oh crap, he's a Jedi, he's gonna kill us all.
And he has four lightsabers.
All we've got are these guns he can just obviously block. And the only thing I don't like, the rest of the story seems really well choreographed and makes sense. At that moment, why does Krell not kill Rex?
Yeah,
he just jumps out the window. It's like, yeah, no, I'll leave you. Remember I said I'll kill you last? Yeah, I was right. No, he's yeah, I was telling the truth. I will kill you last. See ya!
You know, Sully, what I said I'd kill you last.
I lied.
No, Matrix, no. That's right, Matrix, you did. Can we do Commando next week?
No.
It's not an animation.
But I like how they also turned Krell into this like kind of horror figure when like he's hunting down all the clones in the forest as well. It's like everyone's screaming, like, oh, he's over here. Oh, he's killing me. And then they have to try to track him down.
He's a jerk.
I know, but that was like...
Yep,
like,
Stephanie is.
That was very reminiscent of like a horror... What am I thinking? A horror villain.
Yeah. Yeah. Horror movie monster, one of those.
Like a Freddie Mercury.
Like Freddie Mercury?
Yeah, with the gloves.
What?
When Freddie Mercury goes in your dreams and he kills you?
It's Freddie Krueger, not Freddie Mercury.
Did you guys have a favourite clone? I know that might be difficult.
The tattoo one.
Which, Jesse, okay. Why him?
I don't know, I just liked his look. And also, he seemed to be the one with his helmet off the most.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I could identify with him. I mean, even though he took off his helmet, he's like, he looks like all of them.
What about you, Stefan?
Rex. Shouldn't okay. they all, of course, Rex.
Shouldn't they all look more like the New Zealand dude?
Yeah, okay, let's talk about that. He doesn't really look like
they
Tamura
don't have,
Morrison.
I've got to go out on a limb and say they don't have the rights to his likeness.
Mm.
Yeah.
And the voice is not very New Zealand.
No, it's like a weird hybrid of like posh English and Australian and South African. It's just like a hodgepodge of the Anglosphere. It's very strange.
It really is.
I did not think I would hear hodgepodge of the Anglosphere ever as a word.
That'd be a cool band name.
Hodgepodge of the Anglosphere.
But yeah, that is actually one of the criticisms of the show from like certain people who like want more representation and stuff. How the clones are kind of... Yeah, they're not representative of what they are in the films.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't. Yeah, we'll look into that next time because I. It's so weird how they didn't bother to make it like Anakin looks exactly like Hayden Christensen, or at least pretty much like a cartoonified version.
Yeah.
Of him.
Yes. And Obi-Wan is really good as well.
Yeah. Good impersonator that they got for Obi-Wan. I like his voice.
Arnold Johnson Taylor, I think his name is.
I think it's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No.
do an impression of Ewan McGregor.
Oh, actually, there's another fact about the show. General Krell is voiced by David Fennoy, I think his name is, who is the voice of Lee from the Walking Dead games.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It is.
I have nothing to say to that information.
I'm just like, oh, Lee is so great, but Krell is just a terrible person.
Oh, Krell's
person.
A jerk.
Just like Thanos, he's a hulking figure. With a big chin. He's obviously a jerk.
I just realized this whole time I was like, we ever heard General... is it Krell?
Yeah, Krell.
Isn't that the same name as the dictator from The Simpsons when Lisa gets the pen pal letter back from... Do you remember when she gets her pen pal from like... Lisa has a pen pal. It's like one of those throwaway gags in the opening of the episode. And Lisa has like a pen pal from like... I don't know, so like some...
And the letter turns into...
Yeah, it was like, Lisa, as I write this, I am very sad. Our government has been taken over by the benevolent General Krull.
General Krull, very close.
All hail Krull and his new regime, Sincerely Little Girl.
Sincerely Little Girl. Do you remember that? I love how they sign off Sincerely Little Girl.
Final thoughts. This is my favourite story arc in the Clone Wars. One of my favourite stories in Star Wars as well, and... Yeah, it's just everything we've talked about is why I love it, including the dodgy accent.
No, pleasantly surprised by this one. I was ready just to claim that I watched it and then would have just Googled a Wikipedia summary. But no, like you pop in the first episode, I'm like, oh, this is like, it's filmed like a military action film. Really interesting. It's something different and it's just got the right amount of darkness that I think needs to, you know, punctuate more
darkness
children's entertainment.
Darkness in themes or
just
in
all
lighting?
Of it. All of it.
Yep.
I thought, recommended.
I thought it was very mature, which I really appreciated. It was really fun to watch with how it balances its action and its more character-driven moments. And it's still got a bit of, like, childlike fun, especially with the Roger Rogers, who was always great.
Yeah.
I love the Roger Rogers.
Oh, yeah, there were some droids in this as well,
and
yeah.
It's a great contrast when you got this serious, like, story, and then you go to the battle droids and just, like, A thing came in. What do we do, sir? What do we do?
Get him. Oh, no, they're shooting us.
And that's the thing. It's a kid's show that has substance, which a lot of kid's shows now are going into that. But
yes,
considering this is 2011, I think it's
notes, we're back, A Dinosaur Story.
Oh, my God.
Gotta put more substance in your movie.
I think it's very progressive. It's a very interesting watch, and I would recommend it, definitely. Cool. Even as a standalone, because you get an idea for
the clones. This is definitely a standalone arc, which is really great, because if you've never seen any of it, like Michael and Stefan, you can go into it. It might take a bit adjusting to the different clones.
Yeah. I was upset that there wasn't as much Anakin.
Oh, the next arc has a lot of Anakin.
Everything was fine with Anakin there. It was like, oh, this is going to be fun. The second he leaves, it's like, oh, everything's going to be crap now, isn't it?
Is this between episode 2 and 3?
Yes. Okay. All of the series is.
Oh, okay.
So
much happened.
I know. The next arc, though, is going to be also mature because it's going to focus on slavery.
Hardcore pornography. No. Okay.
Slavery. It's going to focus on slavery.
Oh, no.
But it's only 3 episodes.
Okay.
That's
gonna
better.
Are they all going to be in those slave layer outfits?
No.
Oh, it's going to be a reference to them?
No.
Yeah.
Although Ahsoka gets in a slave outfit.
All I can picture is Obi-Wan in like a slave,
a slave layer outfit.
Why
hello there.
He's also in the arc too, so that's going to be fun. But that's not what we're watching next week. Stefan, what are we watching next week?
Please say Help I'm a Fish. Please say Help I'm a Fish.
No, you don't want to do
we're
that.
We're not watching Help I'm a Fish.
What do you want to watch?
I wanted to watch Coraline because it's Halloween coming up soon and I love
Coraline. That's a great idea. And that is the first independent Laika film as well.
When will our Halloween episode be? Will that be the one I pick? Week?
Actually, this might be the Halloween episode.
What, this episode? This one?
Yeah, so... Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay, happy Halloween, everybody!
I mean, it's 2 days before Halloween, but...
That's close enough. All right, I hope you enjoyed this special spooky episode.
Oh, wait, no, you're right.
I'm right. I am a genius.
Oh, so the Coraline one is the Halloween episode.
Yes, okay. Yes.
Ignore the fact that this is a spooky Halloween episode.
I'm going to edit a lot of this out.
But I just like him saying spooky Halloween.
Okay, so yeah, Coraline for a spooky Halloween. That's really great, and I'm looking forward to that too, because we haven't done stop motion in a while.
Mm-hmm. It fell off, just keep going.
Okay, so if you want to contact us, if you want to send us a recommendation...
Send up some spooky mail.
Sign us up to a dating site or whatever. We are animate3pod@gmail.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And you can find us, you can listen to us at most... podcasts and places. Again, I say this at the end of the episode, I don't know why, but if you're listening to it already, you already found a place to listen to us, so that's all good. And have a spooky Halloween in a week.
The end.
What's he gonna do? Sing you bicycle until you like run away in fear?
I want to ride my bicycle.
I want to ride. No, I don't want to go away.
But he doesn't that's like just... Star Wars in that show.
Hey, it's true, that actually. That's exactly yeah. That's exactly.
So it's all connected.
It's all connected.
Yeah.
And he don't like Star Wars.
You say Rolls.
I say Royce.
You say God.
Give me a choice.
You say Lord.
Hey man.
Can we cut out singing? I hate when people sing in podcasts. Yeah, I will. We're gonna cut all that out.